You are listening to Golden Rule Radio, your weekly discussion of the precious metals markets and the markets closely associated with the metals. I'm Tori, alongside Miles and Rob, and together we have over 75 years of experience advising on and brokering the precious metals. And each week, the three of us provide you a technical analysis of the charts, as well as cover those underlying fundamentals that move the markets and help predict the market. So for those of you wishing to follow along while seeing images, you can do so on our website at McIlvaney.com. That's McIlvaney.com. Today, we're going to get into the weekly recap of what gold, silver, platinum, and palladium have done in exciting fashion, as well as some of those underlying fundamentals.
Let's kick it off with gold this week, as we tend to do. Gold up about 3.1%, so a little over 3% from our recording last week. Currently sitting at 3,600. That is, I did say six, $3,640.
Sticker shock.
Yeah, and it actually got as high as 3673, and maybe reaching for the stars or just the next rung on the ladder pricing that we might see for gold here over the next couple of months. So, gold putting in a new all-time high this past week in the mid-3600s. Taking a look at silver, slightly different story, although also up. Silver had a pretty good last couple of weeks. It's flattened out a bit this week, up about 1%, currently sitting at $41.15. So silver, great run so far this year, just taking a couple day breather as it kind of parks around the low $41 range. Checking out the other white metals, platinum actually down, believe it or not, guys. There is something down this week, and it's platinum down about 2%, currently sitting just under $1,400. That's $1,392. And almost 5% down from the recent high it put in last week. So platinum, like silver, big run up last week, taking a little bit of a break this week. Palladium, now time for palladium to try to play catch up. Palladium up almost 4.5% this past week, sitting just under 1,200. So it's at 1,195 at the moment, and squeezing that platinum palladium ratio back down a little bit. Taking a quick look at the S&P has been on a slower, steadier rise, but it's up another 1% this past week, putting in another all-time high, just like gold did, and sitting currently at $6,532. And finally, all of that predicated on the good old U.S. American dollar, down about 0.5%, sitting at 97.83, and continuing its low march downwards like it has been doing over the last couple of months. So gold and the S&P both putting in new all-time highs this week. Where do you boys want to start for the show going forward?
It's been some exciting action, obviously, you know, the price movement in all the metals, quite honestly. The underlying fundamentals to me are the most entertaining that we've had all summer, just about, as we build to this crescendo in the form of rate cuts or whatever it ends up being. But the gold to silver ratio has also climbed. So even though silver has been outperforming gold this year, well, since April, that ratio has come down from 104 down to 86. And now it creeped back up to 89 in this little rally. And that tells me that this is a monetary issue, you know, as rate cuts are. Inflation is a monetary issue. This isn't a debt deficit fiscal issue. It's not a geopolitical issue. And I'm not saying that we don't have some geopolitical concerns, but as we dive deeper into gold, Miles, I think that's the place to start, because it really is telling more of a story than the white metals are, the commodities, if you will.
Yeah, you want to talk about underlying fundamentals. What's the underlying fundamental reason as to why the three of us go to work every day? Every single day, the U.S. dollar becomes less valuable than it was yesterday. Gold being kind of that offsetting dollar hedge is always the thing we're going to look at on the broader scale of things. But it is going to do things like pull silver along with it, pull other commodities, copper and nickel and platinum and everything else along with it, just over the course of the lifespan, although let's say death span, of the fiat US dollar that we use to transact with. It's not surprising to me that, like you said, and I think some of the things we're going to look at here when we get into some jobs reports and everything else later in the show, we're going to see some of those underlying reasons why people are starting to lose faith in that. Or starting might not even be the right word anymore. People are continuing to lose faith in the purchasing power of the dollar over time, and we don't really see an end to it. So I'm looking at gold here, which has been on a bit of a tear since 2024, and we've seen a pretty consistent pattern here now, where we have a bit of a rise in the precious metals, followed by, typically, you'll see either consolidation, like these sideways triangles, pendant patterns that we've been talking about for the last couple of months, where we had one at the beginning of 2024, followed by a breakout that brought us up about 20%. We had another one around the middle of 2024, breakout move up about 20%. We had another one right at the beginning of this year. So it seems like clockwork every 6 or 7 months, another pendant position earlier this year. And then not a 20% rise, but as much as a 35% rise in the price of gold earlier this year. Now that took us into this pendant we've been talking about since what, May?
Yeah.
When we peaked out around 3,500 that we've now had a breakout of. So I started looking at this just from the standpoint of, okay, if we follow a similar pattern, if it's happened three times, there's a good chance there could be a fourth. So if we see something in, let's say, that 20 to 30% range, there's actually a couple prices in here where I think some of the other charting indicators like Fibonacci retracement levels and the like would end up lining really nicely here. So I'm looking at a couple down the road where some of the other rungs on the ladder as gold continues to climb up over time. So I'm really liking 4150. And we might just see that kind of pricing on this move. Now, we may have a couple bumps along the way, but I'm really thinking we're looking at over $4,000 gold pending here in probably this next move over 3, 6, 9, 12 months. And then beyond that, you really could see pricing up around 4,750 and over 5,000 at some point. The fundamental reasons are the reasons why this really isn't about gold going up to a high and then coming back down and trading like markets trade. This is about how gold maintains purchasing power over time. And the other thing we use to actually make those purchases, the US dollar, is deteriorating in purchasing power over time. So what we're really trying to do here is look for these opportunities and these levels to where we can continually add into our position in precious metals. And I'm seeing a couple of things on the charts here where I think you're going to see some trading activity, but that's a ways off from where we're at now. So I don't know, maybe it's closer than I think it is, but 3,600 can be 4,100 pretty quickly. And Tori, if I'm not mistaken, I think when we were chatting earlier, some of the other guys we read are targeting some of the same numbers as well.
Yeah, technical traders, Christopher Mullen, love his analysis. He called for a month ago for about a 17% rise in this rally by the end of September to about 4,100, real similar numbers to what you see on your analysis. So Rob, what are you hearing clients-wise? Is the price important?
Well, they're concerned. I mean, they don't want to chase the market, but they're also worried, what happens if the stock market sells off, if we have a 20% drop in the Dow? How can I buy gold and yet protect myself from downside risk? And we have a solution for that. We're going to talk about that in a little while. So how you can buy gold and yet have some confidence that if we have a downdraft, even short-lived, what can I be buying now that would protect my purchasing power? But along the same lines, I mean, the reason why people are moving into gold right now is because the PPI number came out today. What was the number today on PPI?
Well, I mean, it depends. Year over year versus month over month. So it was better than expected. The PPI, which is the producer's price index, more of that wholesale inflationary metric, came in better than expected at 2.6% year over year. So still north of the 2% target for the Fed, right? It's still growing too fast. But
what were they expecting?
3.3%.
Oh, so a lot less than they were expecting.
A lot less. So that was good. And part of that came from the monthly.
Yeah, but I think, too, part of that is the economy is slowing down. As they revised the jobs numbers downward, we had the fictitious jobs reports during the Biden administration that we all talked about back then. What's happening there?
Going back to the PPI real fast, it actually was a deflationary type of month. I mean, for August, it was negative. It was negative month over month by 0.1%. The previous month, it was up 0.9. And that's what had everybody concerned, is that if we cut rates going into a really high inflationary type of environment, then you're going to pour gas on the fire. But they have to address the jobs issue. And that to me is very, very important, Rob, because those downside revisions, all that means is the Bureau of Labor Statistics has more time to look at the data. They go back with retrospection and analyze what it really is. And they're learning that over the course of the Biden administration, the numbers were false to the upside. It was a falsely optimistic viewpoint and outlook on the labor market. So all along, the Fed has been either raising or refusing to cut because the labor market has been too tight. Well, it's not tight anymore. So now, for the first time, it never really was. And we have felt that we have been in a stagflation, which we've said on this show. The expectation for recession is like down to 12%, where it was like 55% to start the year. So the optimism is still in there. But I think that the reality is starting to set in. And there's a 911,000 job downward revision from March of 24 to March of 25. So over that 1 year period of time, we actually created 911,000 fewer jobs than was originally posted.
And Hedgeye has been talking about, how do they frame this quarter that we're moving into? Is it a stagflation?
Yes, it's a quad three, so that this quarter will be what's quad three, meaning growth is shrinking,
right.
So GDP is lowering, and inflation is increasing. So inflation is increasing. It's still 2.6% of the PPI. The CPI is going to be a more substantial number for the Fed that comes out tomorrow. They love CPI, the consumer price index, and right. They love the core CPI. So we'll get that tomorrow morning, and we'll know a lot more. And then that September 17th Fed announcement on the rate cut will be less of a mystery. I think a lot of it has been priced in, and I think gold is telling that story. It's telling the story on the weak labor market, which is lower tax revenues, obviously a slowdown in the economy, a slowdown in business activity, velocity of the dollar, all of that. So tomorrow will help piece it together.
Even though Hedgeye has been way ahead of the numbers coming out, because they have been, what a valuable service that we get from them. We're also hearing from Wall Street that the old adage where you put 60% of your money in stocks and 40% of your money in bonds and you are balanced, they are now walking away from that, saying you better start adding gold. And this is coming from major Wall Street companies. Gold is now the hedge that we have said it always has been, like Hedgeye is always ahead of the numbers. We've been telling people gold is your hedge, bonds are not, because we are in a period of stagflation and bonds are suffering.
Well, and what it's really showing to me is that gold is even more than a hedge. Let's get into that downside protection piece that you're talking about, because to me, it's a cornerstone, even from a performance standpoint. If it's averaging almost 9% a year over the last 40 years, that's more than a hedge. It's called diversification, but it's a key component that's outpacing the inflation. And these inflation numbers, to me, just like the job market, I don't believe any of it, right? The inflation numbers are still understated. We know we're still north of 5% in reality, if measured the way it was. But there are now more unemployed people in the U.S., 7.24 million unemployed, compared to the number of job openings, 7.18 million.
And how is that affecting the real estate market, Tori? I mean, people still can't afford houses, but there's more houses being built and fewer people able to buy them. And then we're getting reports on the commercial real estate market of empty commercial spaces, banks loaded with commercial real estate paper that is no good. They're carrying it on book value. I mean, it's like $1.3 trillion worth of commercial real estate in this nation is insolvent.
Well, it has to be refinanced.
Yeah.
What does that mean? You've already got vacant spaces.
And nobody's in them.
Underwhelming demand for it. Everybody says it's a steal of a deal on commercial real estate pricing if you're trying to sell. But there's a ripple effect here. And it goes to the banks, because banks can fail as a result of overextending on fractional reserve lending to the loans for these commercial properties. It goes to the bond market, because there's uncertainty. You guys, this is all correlated. So debt and deficit, like the debt is way more of an issue than inflation is. What the dollar's doing lately, which Miles touched on just for the week, down to 97.83, That's weak. What it's done over our lifetime is devastating to our monthly budget and otherwise. But what's really going on behind the scenes is, yes, Treasury yields have started dropping here as of late. And they have got to get those yields down because that's what costs the government. What is the government paying for people to buy our debt, to fund our operations budget? So those rates need to keep coming down. Well, cutting rates is the only way they're going to try to control the yield.
From the Fed standpoint, I know the administration is trying to provide off-ramps for money coming out of treasuries into investing back into the U.S. or creating royalties from government property, mineral rights, timber, you name it. They're going to try to generate royalties off of that. But we're in a pickle. There's no doubt the debt is a bigger issue right now than inflation.
Well, the inflation piece ends up working its way in when you're talking about rolling over the debt. Like, how many times have we had that conversation about the amount of money that's going to need to get refinanced just on government paper?
Or the amount of money it's going to take to try to bail out the banks who are upside down in their commercial portfolios.
And a bank owning an empty building isn't generating revenue. That's money not coming back in. That can end up being loaned out to somebody else for something else. You know, it completely grinds the economy down to a halt because our economy is built on the expectation of the velocity and the turnover and the recycling of money.
Correct. And consumer spending.
Yeah.
Well, and we'll have a lot more to tell next week.
Yeah, we sure will.
We'll have the Fed decision. Is it going to be a quarter point? Is it going to be a half a point? Is it going to be one and done? Is it going to be the first of a few? And we'll get those hawkish versus dovish comments from Chairman Powell next week. But it doesn't change the fact that, Rob, you said this in a different way earlier. Gold is the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah.
It's just telling the story. Like, the higher gold goes... I mean, here I said in my monthly letter to my clients at the end of August, I'm like, I feel very strongly that gold's going to go from 3,400 to 3,600 this month. I didn't expect it to happen in the first week. I mean, this is unbelievable. Now, you can't get pulled into the dollar figure. You have to focus on percentages. And that's why, Miles, your predictions from a Fibonacci number, really, that's not out of reach. It's not even unrealistic because it's not that great of a percentage increase.
No. But it's a big number in people's minds.
Yes.
And they worry about, okay, what kind of gold do I get? Do I go down to Costco and get two bars? What do I do with it? We try to give people ideas. Okay, can I share an idea with you guys? And this is just me, but you can buy 100-year-old half-ounce $10 Indians, MS63. We've just come across actually several mint bags of these coins, original condition, uncirculated. If you go back to 2006, they were $2,000 a coin with gold trading at $635 spot. But a half ounce gold eagle was $350. And it has almost exactly the same amount of gold as a half ounce 10 Indian. Okay, I mean, just a couple percentage points difference between the two. But back 19 years ago, it took five, almost six half-ounce gold eagles to equal the value of one half-ounce $10 Indian graded MS63. Now, the price difference is like 5% more.
Not 500%.
Not 500%. You know, 19 years ago, it took 5.7 half-ounce gold eagles to equal the price of one half-ounce $10 Indian MS63. Now you can buy an MS63 for what, 4 or 5% more than a half ounce gold eagle.
See, that's shocking too, because it's really representative of our industry as a whole right now. We talked about physical coins and bars being down 37% in terms of trade volume, number of ounces being traded.
Yeah.
And yet the spot price continues to climb. And as the spot price climbs and supply is okay and demand is low, the premiums evaporate. So this is actually an unbelievable buyer's market. And people think, well, with the spot price, this is not a buyer's market.
Yes, yeah, it is.
If gold goes up $500 an ounce, that's in your favor. But more importantly, these coins that you're talking about,
what happens if gold goes down $500 an ounce? Do you have any downside protection if you buy a 100-year-old 10 Indian, and I think you do.
I think that's probably a bigger point than anything right there, because yeah. I remember in our family trust buying MS63 $20 Liberties, the 1 ounce variety, in 2008. Gold came off 28% on the spot price. Those coins went up 42% in the same period of time. So what did I do? I swapped them into bullion maple leaves.
Yes, why wouldn't you?
Right, and I picked up 60% more ounces because it was my downside protection. Gold fell, those coins went up, and they were nowhere near the buyer's market that we're seeing right now. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the more important downside. The downside protection is removing all of your risk.
Well, let's compare the 10 Indian to the $20 St. Gaudens, its sister coin, okay? They made 70 million ounces of St. Gaudens. They only made 7 million ounces of the 10 Indians. So they're 1/10 of the ounces were in production when they made them back at the turn of the last century. So you're talking 1/10, just a fraction of the overall availability of the $20 St. Gaudens. And yet the price is ridiculously low. So if people are thinking, okay, I want to buy real gold, I don't want to buy Wall Street's alternative of ETFs or futures contracts, I want it in my hands, or I want it safe, I want it real, this is a great way to own real gold with downside protection. And I don't think those coins will ever be worth 5 or 6 times a half ounce gold eagle, but they're not going to stay here either.
Well, availability is always an issue. Miles, I mean, we need to get into silver a little bit more too, because that's the other way that you downside protect is if people are worried about the gold price being at an all-time high right now.
Right.
And
sure.
How far back is silver from its all-time high?
Yeah, we're at 20%.
What do you see happening there?
And I think this is also a great teaching moment for people who are trying to learn a little bit about the different aspects of the precious metals market, because we're looking at a gold spot price move, like you just talked about, but the coin market is still languishing behind the bullion market in the sense that you would expect coins to outperform spot price as more money moves into them, because coins are a very finite resource that can disappear very quickly. So you're looking at most of what's happening in the price of gold right now happening from the top down.
Big guys.
Big boy investing. You've got sovereign and national banks worldwide increasing gold supply from 8, 9, 10% of holdings up to 25, 26% over the last 10, 12 years. But could you imagine what would happen if 1% of the American public started buying gold?
Or just 1% of the money sitting in treasury bills bought gold? We'd be at $5,000.
Tomorrow. So what we're seeing right now is big money moves first.
Yep.
And eventually, even though those of us that watch gold regularly are looking at these prices relative to the past, today is pretty quickly going to become the past. And there's going to be a dollar price down the road where the general public starts getting involved. And that dollar price is going to be a lot higher than what it is today. Because if the general public wanted to buy gold at $36.50, they would be. Maybe they want to buy it at $5,000. Maybe they want to buy it at $10,000. But there is going to be something that causes that mental switch to flip. And the same thing's going to happen with silver.
Yeah, there's great values in silver.
Unbelievable. I mean, the premium dynamic that you describe is going on there too.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a lot of options there, but it really comes down to why isn't the Western investor buying? And some of it is managed money. I mean, Keith McCullough from HedgeEye this morning said, why wasn't gold in 100% of American retirement accounts? Answer, because there are no Wall Street banking and management fees. When you own the physical metals, you're off the radar. Nobody's getting paid to manage that asset.
Exactly.
You're managing it. And so he calls out Wall Street for what it is. They're not recommending it to you. And it's not your 401k and it's not your IRA because you're not making it happen. And the people that are managing your money don't want to see it happen because it leaves the system. And so they're long gold, silver, and platinum right now, bullish on all three. HedgeEye is not precious metals bugs.
No.
They're just analysts that are telling the truth the way it is. And the truth is you have to call out your wealth management professional or your broker and ask, why don't I own the physical?
So we got to hit it before we close out. Silver. We're almost at the end of the bear market that started in 2011-2012. Ran from September 2011 all the way to about March of 2020 when silver finally bottomed, going from the all-time high at 50 back in 2011, or just under 50. Then it turned down around $43, $44. So almost congratulations to silver on a 40% or so run since the beginning of the year, and also since the April 2nd tariff discussion where we had that big up and down in silver. Silver up 40% since April. And we're closing in on the last little line in the sand before we move into those all-time highs. So we're going to see a lot of activity in the metals market. And I'm telling you guys, when the general public finally gets involved in this market,
watch out.
Watch out. Because that's when you start to see things like rare coin premiums go from 5% to 50. You start to see silver go from 80 to 1, 90 to 1 compared to gold down to 40 or 50 to 1. Well, that's going to do it this week for Golden Rule Radio. As always, we appreciate you stopping by. We encourage you to swing by our website. If you'd like to catch this or any of the other weekly pieces that we put out, you can find us at McIlvaney.com. That's McIlvaney.com. Or you can reach us at 1-800-525-9556. Thanks again for listening and have a great week.